So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to spend the next hour or so talking with you about the Bird City, Wisconsin program and also talking about the birds of Wisconsin. The Bird City, Wisconsin project has announced the first 15 cities in the state to be recognized for their efforts in making their communities a better place for birds and other wildlife. We'll talk about those communities, but also how maybe your community could get involved and how maybe your community could become a bird city. Noel Cutright, emeritus scientist with We Energies, past president, current historian of the Wisconsin Society of Ornithology, is a member of the Bird City Steering Committee. He's championed the Bird City, Wisconsin recognition plan for nearly a decade. He's with us by phone. Noel, hi.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be with you on another holiday here, and it's snowing pretty heavily here in Fort Washington.
Yeah, we're getting a little snow across, I think, a good share of Wisconsin, as a matter of fact. Andrew Strzok with us as well, president of the Milwaukee Audubon Society, Bird City Project leader, and director of the Ozaukee County Planning and Parks Department as well. And he's worked on numerous grant-funded projects in the environmental area. And Andrew is with us by phone as well. Hi, thank you for being with us, Andrew.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you very much for having us. We're also located in Port Washington, where it's snowing pretty good, but I'm glad to be here this morning.
Well, glad to have you guys with us. You know, I was a member of the Dane County Tree Board for many, many years, and one of the big things that we were promoted nationwide was Tree City USA. And Noel, was that sort of the reasoning behind getting a Bird City program started?
Well, I think that certainly helped in our thinking. We knew how successful the Tree City USA program was, and here in Wisconsin we have over 180 communities that are tree cities, and some of these have been tree cities for over 30 years. So we thought if we could come up with kind of a pattern, a program devoted to birds, that these communities would jump at the opportunity. And so far we have been very well received, and we have our first 15 Bird City communities actually recognized, and we're going on. I know a lot of other communities are working on their applications, so we're looking forward to maybe someday excelling even 180 Bird City, Wisconsin communities.
That's great. And Andrew, Milwaukee Audubon Society has just got a dollar grant. What was it, $31,000?
Correct. Yeah, we just received a $31,000 grant through the Together Green program, which is an alliance between Toyota and the National Audubon Society. And we are fortunate enough to leverage those funds in the second year. Actually, we had a first year of planning grant funding to get Bird City started, if you will. So this is our year of implementation. I think, as Noel mentioned, we started off with great success with awarding 15 communities in December, and we're definitely looking forward to working with communities throughout the state to promote Bird City, caring for birds and the communities that they use.
What does it take for a community to be recognized as a Bird City?
Sure, I can start us off. There are basically five categories, basic requirements we call them, and it's menu-driven. It's similar to Tree City, but in some respects a little bit different. We have five categories. Within there, we have a menu of basically criteria that communities can pick from to address to make their community good for birds and increase habitat throughout their community. And those major categories are creation and protection of habitat, which is very important to us, participation in programs promoting effective community forest management. So again, here we're working directly with some of those communities that are familiar with the Tree City program.
Yep.
Limiting or removing hazards to birds. There's a number of things underneath here, but it's things like the Cats Indoors program, reducing window strikes, lights out programs in the more urbanized areas, Certainly public education, that's our fourth major topic, and we focus very heavily on education throughout. And then lastly, a criteria that all communities must meet, and that is celebration and recognition of International Migratory Bird Day, where we actually ask the community to formally adopt a resolution that does recognize International Migratory Bird Day, and then they also would do some sort of celebration.
So everybody has to do the last one.
That's correct.
And then of the four that remain then, how many do they have to pick?
They have to meet at least 7 of 22 22 of the overall criteria. And like I said, there's we ask in that first criteria, creation and protection of habitat, that they meet at least 3 from that category and then 1 from each other.
I've gotcha. Well, Noel, this has got to be exciting for you. You've been involved in this for how many years now? 10 years, roughly?
Yeah, it started as an idea out of the Urban Committee for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative about 9 years ago. But we really couldn't find any funding and time to work on it. We tried to market it to a couple of the national organizations, and we actually traveled out to the East Coast to give them presentations. And they thought it was a great idea, but it just didn't fit into their programs at that time. And essentially, they said, well, go back to Wisconsin and start one and show us what it should be and how successful it can be. And I guess ideally, we hope this will go national at some point. So as Andrew mentioned, we got a small planting grant to get it off the ground and to start the process. And now we're going into our first really full year of funding, and hopefully we'll see success that ultimately will lead to a broader geographical area where we'll have the Bird City program nationwide maybe at some point.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Maybe you have a question or comment. If you do, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us as well with your question or comment. The email address, talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And I actually, just before the program started, I went onto your website, and I just typed in Tree City, Wisconsin, and up it popped. And it's a pretty good-looking website.
Yeah, as part of our planning grant, one of the things that we were able to do, Larry, was really get this website in a shape for referring communities to not only for assistance in how they meet the criteria, but actually putting the application and everything else online. So we really consider our website as one of our main tools, just birdcity.org. And we definitely want to reach get people connected to that website and the information that's on there.
Yeah, when people visit the website, they'll visit right at the home page, and immediately crops up some of the pictures of some of the celebrations that we've done.
Yeah.
The pictures highlight Carl Schwartz, who is the Bird City coordinator. In fact, today he's off in Tanzania in Africa, so don't think he's seeing any snow, but Carl has been a wonderful person. He was a senior editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, has retired and had some time and took this on, and he's just been a wonderful person who has really spearheaded this and worked on getting some wonderful information on the website and being able to communicate with all the communities that have shown some interest in this.
Yeah, and I see Mayor Jim Schmidt accepting a plaque on behalf of Green Bay, and Stevens Point Mayor Andrew Halverson.
Yep.
On there too as well. I noticed the nice looking signs as well.
Yes, that's we really feel fortunate that we were able to invite Tom Utek, who is one of the nation's premier landscape artists, who's here in Ozaukee County in the town of Saukville, and his wife, who is a designer, to come up with the logo for Bird City, Wisconsin. And it's a very colorful, and I think it certainly gives the feeling, anyone sees it, that we're talking about birds, and we're also talking about where people live, because it does feature a structure in it. And this is our logo that will be featured on all the road signs that will be going up in these communities, also in any kind of plaques that they receive, and also a flag that they'll receive when they become a Bird City, Wisconsin community.
Yeah, it's really pretty. That's a very nice sign. I really like it. Ben in Mequon has a comment or question. Ben, let's go to you. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I would like to celebrate your cause. However, I would like to address the issue that our communities do not address what land stewardship means to a property owner. And I say that because right here in Mequon, I can't get our city government to change the invasive weed list for people eradicating things that shouldn't be in the environment, that do damage bird habitat and other forms of wildlife habitat. There's no emphasis at all to landowners on how to be good land stewards.
Well, let's get a comment. Noel, let's go turn to you first.
Well, I think it's always a challenge that we have so many invasive plant species that are on the landscape and seem like we're adding more that we're becoming aware of all the time. And certainly when we recognize Bird City, Wisconsin community, they're not doing all they could be doing, but at least they're addressing it from a public education standpoint. Many of them have chosen one of the criteria to make information on this plant invasives available to their constituency in that particular community. And some are you know, working on certain properties, trying to encourage public land, or not public landowners, but private landowners to do what they need to do to take care of their land and be good stewards is certainly a challenge. And I think it's a work in progress, and I agree with you that there's probably additional steps that we could take to maybe do more from a regulation standpoint on invasives, but at least we're trying to bring it to the awareness of these communities that taking care of our lands is something that should be done, and controlling invasives is certainly an objective. And Andrew, I know you face this in Ozaukee County all the time on how to encourage people to address invasives.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is it's an ongoing education component, and I think that's one thing Bird City strives to do is, you know, provide those links for municipalities to learn more about specific invasives and how to go about really getting at changing kind of practices that can help manage for them. But it is ongoing. And along those sides, along with invasives, one of the things that Bird City also strives to do is work with private landowners on, if you will, naturalizing or allowing for wild areas within their landscape that can provide habitat and rest areas and all the criteria that are important to birds for migrating or living. So, yeah, I think the invasive species is one that we will continue to work on. And the benefit of Bird City, I think, is we work directly with municipalities. And so hopefully we can begin to influence longer-term practices for controlling invasives.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Ben. Noel Cutright and Andrew Strzok, our guests today, as we talk about the Bird City, Wisconsin program. Larry Mueller here. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Noel Cutright, one of our guests today, member of the Bird City Steering Committee. He's championed that program for a long, long time. Andrew Strzok of the Milwaukee Audubon Society, Bird City Project Leader and Director of the Ozaukee County Planning and Parks Department. Great to have them both with us, and thank you for listening in as well. Questions about birds here as we talk about the bird situation in Bird City, Wisconsin, with our two guests. Join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Another listener wondered about, guys, about the Cats Indoors program and wondering whether or not cats are that big a threat to our birds. And I don't know, Noel, do you want to take a stab at that first?
Yes, they certainly are, Larry. It's something I think a lot of people really don't recognize, and it hasn't really gotten spread far and wide enough, I don't believe, of how important a predator cats are. And most people that really looked at mortality of birds and what are the leading factors, put window strikes is the number one when you look at the total across the United States, and cats is probably two. So there's no question that cats, and even though indoor cats, for the most part, they're maybe only let outside for a short time, even those cats, even though they're well-fed, well-taken care of, they still have that instinct to hunt. And even for a short time outside, they can certainly kill a number of birds when you look at across the entire year. Other cats that maybe are barn cats or those cats that have become feral and are pretty wild, of course, they can even kill more birds. So when you look at the number of cats that are in our landscape today, it is really an enormous number when we look at nationwide as far as the number of birds that cats take.
Well, how did we get these 15 cities? And as a matter of fact, before we get to that, I noted here that one of the bird cities is a town, the town of Manitouish Waters in Ozaukee County. The town of Manitouish Waters is one, and then Ozaukee County as another. So it doesn't have to be a big city.
That's correct. We wanted any organization that had a government involved, we wanted them to become eligible. So in this first 15, we did have one county, Ozaukee County. We did have one town, as you mentioned, the Manitouish Waters. And then we had a number of the rest of the communities were either cities or villages. So you could be a city, village, town, or county. And any of those can qualify and apply and become a Bird City, Wisconsin community.
And typically, who within the communities would you be dealing with? Andrew, you want to take a
Sure, I can. Typically, the folks that we've had the most contact with, and we hope to expand this network, but, logically, we've worked with a lot of the planning and parks directors in other communities, whether they're actively managing a park system or whether they're involved in planning for the community and the habitat that they can either set aside or plan for. So those have been our first level contacts, and we are working also very closely with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and their urban forestry program, which has been very successful in reaching out to the foresters within each of these communities. And so we are approaching that as well to reach out to some of the foresters in those communities that already have a vested interest in the forestry aspect and their habitat within the communities to take it to their community and work with partnering organizations that they have within their community, other nonprofit agencies that can assist as well.
Yeah, what we've seen is that some of these non-government organizations, whether it's the local Audubon Society or Bird Club or Nature Center, or other type of, they very often will contact their local community government officials. And we've seen some wonderful examples already of some relationships and partnerships that have built up where in the past they really had no contact. Now we're seeing some of these organizations being able to work with their government organizations to work on Bird City. And we've seen joint applications. We've seen other situations where, for example, in Stevens Point, the Aldo Leopold Audubon Society really took the lead and worked hard on the application and then brought in the government officials as necessary. And we've seen some nice relationships become established and some dialogue being established between these local organizations and the local government to really focus on becoming a true Bird City, Wisconsin community.
And a comment from Willem from Colfax, he says, well, he drives for a living. He drives about 250 miles a day, and he notices that cars kill a lot of birds, maybe more than cats. What do you guys think?
Well, it's certainly a major factor. Some of the numbers I've seen on vehicle road kills are like in the 50 to 100 million per year in the United States, but the estimates I've seen for cats does exceed that, but striking of vehicles is certainly one of the probably top five death factors that are directly related to man.
Yeah, and I think there's and Noel mentioned it earlier, but I think Bird City also hopes to address some of the other hazards that we may be aware of, but maybe don't give as much thought to, which is, you know, some of our buildings and our structures, particularly at nighttime for migrating birds, and really any structures, power lines and other things that we need to be concerned about or at least try and address. And so Bird City is really looking to provide information on all those things and how we can minimize those unintended consequences.
What about structures at night? What's the issue there?
Well, there are a number of programs, but oftentimes migrating birds migrate during evening hours when it's dark, and oftentimes lights on in buildings, particularly high-rise buildings, but it can be almost any, can attract them and draw them into kind of window strikes or window collisions. And so there are a number of programs nationwide, but even here within Wisconsin, that's trying to address kind of a lights-out program, particularly during migrating periods for birds, spring and fall, that we can hope to minimize some of that conflicts.
And you know, birds are attracted to light at night, and they become very disoriented, especially under low ceiling conditions or in foggy conditions. And there was a case here a number of years ago, which is somewhat of a parallel to the recent bird deaths we saw with birds being scared out of nighttime roosts that become disoriented and end up crashing into most anything in their way.
Yeah.
These birds were attracted to a tall communications tower out in North Dakota, and 10,000 of them just started circling around, becoming disoriented, and they ended up flying right into the ground and killed about 10,000 birds in one underneath one tower. So lights on tall structures, that's one of the concerns we have with wind towers and tall communications, that they use strobe lights rather than continuous burning lights, because it definitely can attract birds and cause some really mass mortalities in those situations.
So strobe lights are better.
Strobe lights are definitely better, right?
Wow. Noel Cutright and Andrew Strzok, our guest, as we talk with them about Bird City, Wisconsin, and about the birds of our state. Call us at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Andrew, I don't remember, I wonder if there's a bird-loving citizen out there listening and finding out, well, my community isn't involved. Can even one person apply?
Well, we do need it is through a community, but certainly one person can most definitely make a difference, and that's by working with their local community or local nonprofit organization. And we're set up such that, you know, if that person is interested, they don't know how to begin, they can visit our website to get the criteria at birdcitywisconsin.org. But they can also call Carl Schwartz, who has been wonderful in making those contacts and working with people to work with their community to apply. So ultimately, though, it does need to be a community, a city, village, county, or town that is the applicant.
And one of the neat things on the website, Larry, is that you can go to a map under Bird Cities, which is a second choice. There's a Wisconsin map of cities, and it shows where the locations of those are. And if you click on those, you can see what that actual community did to become a Bird City. So it's kind of a roadmap, or provides lots sorts of information for someone just starting out. Well, what did New London or what did Oshkosh do to become a bird city? And they can click on those little icons on this map, and it pulls up what they actually did. So, and it gives some of the highlights. For example, Oshkosh did some bird monitoring of a colony that's in the city, Menominee Park. They also are part of the Great Wisconsin Birding and Nature Trail. About 20 years ago or so, they became aware of an old Martin house at the Oshkosh Water Treatment Plant, and they've really renovated and got a number of houses up now, and have one of the most thriving purple martin colonies along the shore of Lake Winnebago. And so it really kind of helps people become familiar with the sorts of things that a community can do to qualify as a bird city.
It's really interesting. I've got to go take a look at the map and see the map, of course, it's pretty heavy in the sort of southeast or eastern side of the state, with sort of River Falls over there on the far west.
That's
side.
Right.
And, of course, Manitowishwa, the town of Manitowish Waters, way pretty much toward the top of the state. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yep. We do know there's some communities in the Madison area. I know McFarland has been really working hard, and they'll be submitting an application for our next go-around, which I should mention. applications for this next round are due March 1st, so about a month and a half. We'll hopefully be reviewing another set of applications and announcing some others around April 1st.
Andrew, you're president of the Milwaukee Audubon Society. Milwaukee hasn't quite made it yet, but can a big city like Milwaukee pull this together?
Absolutely, and in fact, we are working with the city of Milwaukee now, and certainly they meet a number of criteria, and we're helping to work with them on how they can pull a full application together. But it can be everything from city of Milwaukee, which is obviously the largest, to a smaller community like the town of Mantush Waters. But we are working with the city of Milwaukee, and we hope that they will have an application in shortly.
Let's turn to Carson in Dover Township. Hi, Carson. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. I have two questions. This morning, in a small bush about 15 feet away from the house, I live out in the countryside, I saw a small hawk that I haven't seen before. It was no more than 10 inches long. It had kind of off-white breast with black and brown speckles, and the body itself was a dark brown. And I've never seen a hawk that close to a occupied building before.
Well, I think you've identified an immature, sharp-shinned hawk. This is one of our smallest accipiter-related or in the same group as Cooper's hawks. Both of these, both Cooper's and the smaller cousin sharp-shinned, are predators of small birds. So I'm guessing that you have some house sparrows or juncos or maybe some other feeder birds in the community. And I had one visit our feeders yesterday in the town of Saukville here in Ozaukee County. It flushed the birds, and one of the birds actually flew into the side of the house on the front porch, and the sharp shin came along and picked it up and carried it off and had its meal for the day. So I'm sure it's an immature sharp-shinned hawk.
Now, how do you spell that? I'm not quite catching.
Sharp is S-H-A-R-P hyphen shinned, S-H-I-N-N-E-D. Sharp-shinned hawk.
Thank you. One last thing, if you don't mind. I recently moved back to my parents' old house, and this is my first winter here in many, many years, and we've got a fairly good-sized blue jay population, and I've had blue jays pecking at the glazing on this window. And I've never seen or heard that before. I called my county extension agent, and they'd never heard of that before.
That's kind of interesting behavior. I know all the species in the corvid family, including crows and blue jays are in that same family, tend to be somewhat curious. But what they're actually doing with that, I wouldn't really know either.
Hmm. All right, there you have it. Thank you, Carson, for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to John in Mequon next. John, hi to you.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a question regarding owls. Two parts. Is there anything that I can do to attract them? I'm going to think not, but I just love their call at night. And I do believe that may be the only winged predator for rabbits. Rabbits and probably squirrels. I have an awful lot of squirrels around my squirrel feeders, which were mislabeled in the store as bird feeders.
Mm-hmm.
And and there are hawks that come around and pick up a bird as a. I have a series of feeders that what I call a hawk buffet, but never do I see the squirrels bothered by any predator bird.
Well, squirrels are definitely taken, and chipmunks and cottontail rabbits are definitely taken, both hawks and owls. You know, it's hard to actually catch one in action. Great horned owls would certainly prey upon rabbits that tend to come out at night. Squirrels are not quite as nocturnal, so they're probably not quite as much danger as some of your diurnal raptors, your hawks. You mentioned attracting owls. I should, before I forget it, Mequon is one of the Bird City, Wisconsin communities in this first round, and Christine Nuremberg, your past mayor in Mequon, was really spearheaded this application. But you can put up nest boxes for eastern screech owls. They're the a small owl that do nest in cavities. So there are plans out there on the website for screech owl boxes. If you have a woodland, you can try that. And occasionally even in barred owls will also nest in larger nest boxes. So there are a couple of structures that you can put up for owls to nest in.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Andrew, maybe to you for just a minute as we look at this Bird City program. What is there a section there in terms of sort of the average homeowner doing things to attract birds to their area?
Yes, actually, we have a lot of information about backyard habitat for birds. When we hope to get more up, but you know, it's some of the suggestions that Noel mentioned about cavity nesting birds can be owls, bluebirds, and so we have information like that on the website. We hope to add more. We also hope to add, you know, information about how natural landscaping within people's backyards can also benefit birds, and just providing food, cover, and water for birds in your home, even if you have a very small area and not an extensive yard, there's still things that you can do, and we do have that up on the website.
Yeah, one of the menu items on the website is under protecting. And under there, we have 10 simple ways people can protect birds and habitat improvement. Plants that provide food for songbirds, preventing window strikes. So one of the things we definitely want to have a number of educational pieces out here on the website that people can look at and hopefully take action on.
Absolutely. Well, let's turn to Sally in Racine next. Hi, Sally.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
For the past few days, my husband and I have been noticing in our backyard a single bird at the bird feeder, and he also flies down into the pond, and he flicks his tail, but he's a plump brown bird with a whitish breast with little brown speckles on it, has big eyes and kind of a pointed beak. And we've looked in bird books and looked on the Internet and wonder if it could be a hermit thrush.
Well, hermit thrushes are typically migrate out of Wisconsin in the wintertime.
Yeah.
We always do have a few that stick around. We always record a few on Christmas bird counts over the December-January holiday period.
Uh-huh.
So it's definitely a possibility. Have you been able to notice its tail at all? They tend to have a little bit of a rusty tail.
Yes, he does, and I'm looking at him right now.
Okay.
I've got my binoculars on the bird feeder, and he has a rusty tail.
Yeah, these birds are in the thrush family related to robins and bluebirds, so they tend to have a speckled breast.
Yeah.
And just a little bit smaller than a robin, but they have a rusty tail typically, and they kind of raise their tail at a cocked angle sometimes when they're perched. But that's a good bird to have around in the wintertime. We don't have many of them that stay around, so you're fortunate to have one. I should mention that I do know that Racine is also working on an application. I think the Hoy Audubon Society in Racine is working with the folks there to get an application. So hopefully Racine will become a Bird City community here soon.
That's great.
Well, I think it's great, too. We do everything we can in our yard. But thank you so much for the ID. I'm glad we have it.
Well, thanks
All
for
right.
calling, Sally.
Thanks for calling. Sarah in Zion, Illinois, let's turn to you. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I have a question about owls also, because down here in Illinois, we just have these forested areas called forest preserves that's set aside, and I know they support owls, and I was wondering how many acres do the different kind of owls need for to be able to breed, especially a great horned owl?
Well, typically, the larger the bird, the bigger territory it takes, even though that's not always for everything, but that's kind of a rule of thumb. And it really depends on the quality of the habitat to a large degree. You know, if there's a lot of good habitat that can provide what the bird needs, it doesn't need as many acres as if it's widely distributed or lower quality habitat. So it's hard to give you a hard and fast number on that. But probably for great horned owls, maybe a pair for every square mile or two or three square miles. So, you know, you're talking about a few hundred acres. But certainly the forest preserves in Cook County and other counties around Chicago are excellent habitat for not only great horned owls, but also for screech owls and barred owls would be the three species you would expect to inhabit the woodlands in those areas. And they're courting right now. We have a nest box that we put up a number of years ago for peregrine falcons at the Oak Creek Power Plant in Milwaukee that was taken over by a great horned owl. They've raised young. In fact, we recorded last year the earliest egg laying of a great horned owl in the history of Wisconsin. They actually started laying eggs in December.
Wow.
The female was lost, but now the male has made a scrape in the box, and it's a gravel substrate on the bottom of the box. He put a dead meadow vole in there in the last week or so. I think he's trying to attract a new female to use the box. So you'll go out and hear the male and female calling back and forth this time of year, and they'll be starting to nest in earnest here in February.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Sarah, for calling. And Larry in Stevens Point, on to you. Hi, Larry.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Down there? Noel, just a side comment. That peregrine's really hoping to get lucky, isn't he?
Yes.
I had two quick comments. I'm president of the Aldo Leopold up here, Audubon Society, and I wanted to comment just how receptive all of our administrators and even legislators, county executive, were when we actually received the Bird City designation. It was really a good public event. But the thing I really wanted to comment on was the importance of Central America for our birds in Wisconsin that migrate here, and put in a plug for the ocelots and orioles program that the Wisconsin Natural Resources Foundation is involved with to acquire land on the Osa Peninsula in Costa Rica that is where a lot of our birds winter. I don't know whether you would have any comment on that, Noel.
Well, thank you, Larry. And yes, Stevens Point certainly had a grand recognition event that was well attended by, 50 or 60 people, is my understanding from Carl. And I think Aldo Leopold certainly spearheaded with you, and Kent did a wonderful job with Stevens Point. And yes, it's not enough just to provide habitat to here for our birds and the breeding season, because many of them do leave the state and many of these head for the tropics. So we need to ensure that not only do we have breeding habitat, but wintering habitat and also stopover migration habitat that birds can stop on the way north or south to refuel and be able to continue their migratory journey. And in fact, Andrew, you might want to mention what's happening in Milwaukee here soon. We have a Milwaukee Alderman sponsoring a landscapes conference, and there's an avian part of that, and we'll be talking about birds as in this conference.
Yeah, absolutely, Noel. Thank you. The Milwaukee Audubon Society, like other Audubon chapters around the state, are excellent resource for birding and bird habitat. So I encourage those that might be interested in getting their community involved with Bird City to also work with their local Audubon chapters. But Milwaukee Audubon is again 31st annual Natural Landscapes Conference, where we have a whole track on avian connection. And this year we're really talking about migration along the Lake Michigan shoreline in particular, but also between kind of Lake Michigan and the Horicon Marsh, two wonderful birding habitat areas within our region. But I would also just mention that we're able to do Bird City through a partnership of 10 organizations. So there are statewide organizations, not the least of which are the Wisconsin Audubon Council, which is a partnership of all of our local chapters, and also the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology and the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, all of which have links on our Bird City website and are great resources for this kind of information.
Absolutely. Thanks, Larry. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Noel Cutright, member of the Bird City Steering Committee. Andrew Strzok is leader and director of the Ozaukee County Planning and Parks Department. Bird City project leader, our guest here as we talk about birds and Bird City, Wisconsin. on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go back to the phones for questions, I wanted to turn back to you, Noel, and you, Andrew, for a little bit more information on the, you know, we've already got 15 cities now in the state recognized as bird cities, and there's another round that's going. What's the process on this anyway? Of the application, and then are they, is there, I assume there's, is there a rolling deadline, or is there a hard and fast deadline? Andrew, do you?
Sure. I can talk a little bit about the process. So we are taking applications again in March, as Noel mentioned, and we will take applications on a rolling basis throughout the year. And bird cities are recognized for basically a one-year term, and then we ask that they share with us again how they're meeting bird city status. So it's an annual program. We have a rolling deadline throughout the year, three times, our next one being March 1st. And we're hoping to get the next round of applicants awarded so that they can celebrate International Migratory Bird Day. Typically, our turnaround for reviews of applications is fairly quick, and something that the steering committee works hard on reviewing and working with applicants to make sure the application is complete. But and all that information is on our website as well.
Let's take some more calls here. And Eleanor in Wausau, it's your turn next. Thank you for waiting. Hello.
Good morning. So I'd like to address the window strikes. And I also have a question on a bird I can't identify.
Okay.
I've had great success with these self-adhering decals that you put on the outside of the window. I got them from Wild Birds Unlimited here in Wausau. And when you go to wash the window, you simply peel them off and then put them back later. They leave no deposit of anything on the window. But I don't know how many birds I have killed over the last 40 years from hitting my window in front. They seem to think they can fly straight through.
And the decals help.
Pardon me?
And the decal helps.
Oh, yes. They work like magic. Since I put them up last year, I haven't had a single strike.
Okay. That's wonderful.
Okay. One flew into the back window of my garage this summer, or fall, I should say. And at first, I thought it was a junco. Until I picked him up, he was dead, of course. And he was the size of a junco, but black on top, and had a completely white breast. But the tips of his tail were bright yellow. No one here can help me identify. And I
no, any idea?
Boy, right
or Andrew?
Not off the top of my head. Dark on top, white stomach, and yellow.
White breast, yes.
You said yellow on the tips of the tail?
Yes, bright yellow.
Ooh. Nothing's registering with me. Andrew, anything with you?
I'm sorry. You said it was a brown overall?
No, black.
Black, okay. Yeah, no, I'm not sure.
I mean, cedar waxwings have yellow tips to their... But they are somewhat darkish on the top, but they don't have really a whitish breast. They're pretty much
I'm familiar with the cedar waxwings.
Interesting. That's well, maybe somebody else has got an idea. I think you got us stumped for now, Eleanor. Maybe somebody else will have a suggestion, so stay listening. Dave in Madison asks, from top to bottom, which birds have the best hearing and which the worst, or do we know?
Boy, that's a good question. I'm not sure that there's been a lot of work done on trying to determine the ability of birds to be better than another species. Certainly, things like barn owls are... which is one of our really nocturnal owls, an endangered species here in Wisconsin. They have tremendous hearing because they can catch a mouse in complete pitch darkness. So we know that their hearing is just unbelievable. But I don't think there's been a lot of work done trying to determine what, say, a cardinal can hear compared to a robin or compared to a goldfinch. I just don't know of any studies like that are going on, but I guess without knowing details, I would probably put barn owl out there as probably one of our species that can hear the best. I have no idea about worst.
Oh, Andrew, any comment?
No, but it gives us good fodder for looking up some of this information, current research, to get it up on our website. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's for the Bird City website. Yeah,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good question.
Roger in Lake Zurich, Illinois. On to you. Hi, Roger.
Hi, very important program. I have two questions and a quick comment. The comment I'll do first. If these people photograph these birds and put them on a group called ID Please on Flickr, someone from around the world will identify these animals.
Yeah, good suggestion. Flickr site is a wonderful site.
Yeah, I'm one of the heavy hitters. I got over a million views on my site. The other thing is, I'm wondering how many birds the BP oil spill is going to kill. And the other question, my last question, and I'll hang up. Bird feeders and bird baths, are they spreading disease? And maybe giving people some maintenance tips on these and what type of bird feeders to buy and bird baths that don't spread disease. And thanks again for a great program.
Mm-hmm. You know, talking about the oil spill, I know there's a number of organizations that have been spending quite a bit of time down there, not only cleanup, but doing monitoring and so forth. And I think the verdict is still out on exactly what the overall impact of the oil spill will be. But I know a number of organizations, national organizations, international organizations, are taking a look at that. That's a good suggestion on bird feeders and bird baths. Maybe get some information up on the Bird City, Wisconsin website. It is important to, you know, keep feeders clean, and there's some guidelines on there of how often this should be done, and, you know, wash them with water with bleach in it to kill any organisms that may cause some problems. You know, birds will defecate in bird baths, and you know, it's a good idea to keep them scrubbed out and again washed every so often with water with some bleach in. But I don't know if we have anything on the website right now on bird feeder, bird bath maintenance, but when Carl gets back from Africa, we'll assign him to get some information on the website, Larry.
Yeah, and I would just echo what Noel said. I think the maintenance is probably the most important thing for preventing spreading disease. So we'll definitely get that up. And just as regards to the oil spill, I know that National Audubon Society just put out a release report, if you will, about some of the work that they've been involved in. And I'm sure you can find that on their National Audubon website, kind of a status report at this point. But I think there's certainly more to be learned, and the impacts not entirely known at this point.
Do you have on there, David in Sheboygan was wondering if there's resources that list places to obtain native plants and such for birdscapes?
There is a link to Backyard Bird Habitat, and it links to some other websites, as well as a listing. UW Extension put together a nice resource. While it might be getting a little dated at this point, there's a nice resource of natural landscaping outlets, but there's also links to other websites that provide both government and other websites that provide links and information about backyard bird habitat and resources, plants, plant lists, etc.
All right. And Scott in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Great show. I have a question about a phenomenon I've noticed over the years. You know, every fall and to a lesser degree somewhat in spring, we see lots of migratory waterfowl in Wisconsin. And I've always been curious why, other than blackbirds or starlings, which I think of together, although I'm not sure that how related they actually are, you don't see flocks, for the most part, of songbirds. Occasionally in the spring, I'll see 15 or 20 robins together as they come back, but I'm wondering, do our migratory songbirds migrate at high altitude, or do they fly at night, or why is it so uncommon, given all the birds there are, to see groups of them moving in the spring and the fall? And I'll take any response you have off the air.
All right. We don't have much time here. Most of our songbirds are nocturnal migrants, even though blackbirds do migrate during the daytime, along with our swallows and chimney swifts. Those birds that can catch birds during the daytime as they migrate are very often diurnal migrants, but the great majority of our songbirds are nocturnal migrants. And then they sit down during the daytime to rest and find food, to restock the energy supply so they can continue migration. And there are some birds that just roost communally for whatever reason. You know, crows gather tonight or at night in communal roosts, as do starlings and blackbirds.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you're right, Noel, we are kind of running out of time. I want to direct people back to the Bird City, Wisconsin website, which is birdcitywisconsin.com. And there
.org.
I'm sorry, .org. Oh, I've got that wrong. Okay, birdcitywisconsin.org. Let's put it that way. Okay.
Yep.
Actually, if you just typed in Bird City, Wisconsin, you'd get it. And there you're going to find all the information about how your community, doesn't have to be a city, can be a county, could be a village, a town, can apply to be recognized as a bird city. And Noel and Andrew, thank you so much for being with us today.
Always enjoy it, Larry.
Yeah, thank you very much, Larry. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Noel Cutright and Andrew Strzok, both very heavily involved in the Bird City program for Wisconsin. It's a great, great idea. It's nice to have it originate right here in the state. I bet it goes nationwide. Thank you for listening. Coming up, a tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King at our state capitol. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.